Hi, this is Jason Garfield from the World Juggling Federation, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, this is Chris Lee of the Chris Lee Band, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Look, our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Verbal shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Yeah, that's actually kind of the future of this podcast. We're just going to be sending like 30-second audio clips with face filters on them, and you know, that's it.
It's just us. All right, we got former President Barack Obama. How's it going? Good? All right, that was a great show.
But anyway, guys, welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans. If this is your first time tuning into this amazing experience that you'll never forget. Truly, you will never forget it, one way or another. But so basically, the show we put a podcast out every Monday, just about every Monday or so, and we bring on an interesting guest and talk about life, and that's really play some stupid games, and that's kind of it. So welcome to the show. That's Mike. I'm Scott, and this is episode. 262, I think, 262. So if we don't do it for you here, there's 260 plus hours of footage that we might audio that we might actually interest you in. So who knows? There's got to be at least 10 good minutes out of the probably 400 plus hours of podcasting.
Go into one of them random number generators and just pick a number, and I'm sure the number that comes up will be the episode. You're like, okay, now I get this group.
That might actually
Thank God they said 37, this computer.
It might actually be a funny bit where we could actually go back to a random cast and see what the hell we were talking about at a random time code or who we were talking to. But if you're tuning in last week, we had Eddie Curry on, or Ed Curry, not the former New York Nick that they signed for a lot of money that didn't pan out. Nick and Chicago Bull, I believe. The owner of the Pucker Butt Pepper Company. So
it's good stuff, man. It was good stuff.
It was good stuff.
And as usual, we got another group on tap. So
that's true. That's true. We have another group on tap. So, Mike, how's it going down there? How's it going in the sweet state of Georgia?
It's going all right, man. Had a Sunday where I had to deal with a bunch of strangers and all trying to sell off my old car. So that was always kind of fun. I had to sit around for a few hours. A guy from Alabama swore he was coming up to grab my car. But then I had to turn around and deal with about eight other strangers, which is always fun. And considering my amount of how much I know about cars, the questions were just riveting.
So what was like what's something he asked you that you were like, oh crap, I know no idea what this guy's talking about?
Well, just like stuff like I put on there literally about the car, and I'm saying I'm selling it. It's got brake issues. You gotta, you know, take it to a shop. I'm selling it as is, and right. It'd be like, well, describe the issue. And it's like, well, it's a soft pedal. Well, does it, what kind of anti-lock brakes do you have on there? I'm like, the ones that stop the car, but this time it takes a little longer for it to stop the car.
Yeah, I got to admit, if I was to sell my car right now, like privately, I would probably not be very good at that. I don't think I would even and I'd have to like remember the process of selling a car in the first place, like as far as the title and sale and things like that. I think I would have to refresh myself on how to sell a car.
Yeah, the, always the fun is the Facebook answer where, like, I'll pay you a quarter of what you asked for, but cash.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you really think I was taking credit cards here?
You probably could if you had, like, that Square thing now. You could probably take a credit card payment.
I mean, you technically can, but how many people go into it figuring, well, he must have this?
You should have bent over and made him swipe the card between your butt cheeks and then... Just not then said I only take cash. Make him do something very embarrassing. Though that might be more embarrassing for you. I'm not sure.
I mean, I could do that, but then what would I normally do on a Monday?
So, I don't know. Do it on a Tuesday?
I mean, it's going to throw off my schedule. I mean, like, honey, I know you want to run, but I need my Discover butt card swipe tonight. So, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I guess a quick news here on the podcast. We're in a new location. We're in a new, I guess, internet location. We are, and this one could be cool because it's right where I live. We're going to be on Denville Radio, baby. We're going to be on the radio station, or the I guess you can call it the internet site of Denville Radio. I reached out to a nice guy, DJ LaFave. I'll give him a little shout out there. We're going to be on Denville Radio.
Now, is he the French cousin of Flavor Flav?
He is. The Jersey cousin.
Oh, thanks.
The Jersey cousin of Flavor Flav.
I was wondering whatever happened to that cousin. As he was going, yeah, boy. I'm like, yeah, but where's your cousin boy there? You know?
Correct.
That's how I roll.
Yeah. So go give them a. I don't even know where they're up yet. I mean, if you type it in Google, you'll find it. But I'm not sure on the Instagram or Twitter thing. I do know they have a Facebook, so go check them out. But
now, are you worried when the show destroys in Denville, like Howard Stern level huge, that you won't be able to just walk around?
Like,
and be a normal person anymore.
So when it just blows up and everyone's like, oh my God, he lives right here in town. Like, you know, like people standing outside my house, paparazzi photos as I'm pulling out of the driveway, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you'll be like sitting on your porch and there'll be fans on canoes in the lake going, we love you, Scotty! No, Scotty, don't go inside. We love it when you drink coffee on Sunday morning. Woo woo!
People just hanging out on paddle boards, waiting to get a glimpse of me. Just, I'm actually
bread and butter.
I'm actually like I got asked to do. They do a once a year comedy show here at the little clubhouse thing that's down the street, and I got asked to be on it. I originally wasn't going to do it, but it's like pretty good money, and I'm like, ah, oh, man, just. Oh, there's like a more pressure doing a stupid clubhouse gig where you live than like last weekend opening for Jackie Martlin. Like I don't know. It's like, man, if I bomb, am I just going to get weird looks and people being like, yeah, keep doing your, he's a quote unquote comedian in the neighborhood. And they, like, I don't know. I did the idea. I'm not a big fan of bombing, of performing in front of tons of people that I know to begin with. So this this is going to be interesting. We'll see how this goes. And I couldn't really say no. So,
well, I mean, technically you could have. I mean, you could have said I'll organize it.
Somebody else was organizing it and asked me to.
You could co-organize.
I kind of did.
Co-host.
I did. I did bring in the headliner. So it should be,
oh,
but I mean. Doesn't matter. But yeah, I don't know. Performing in front of like my parents only just saw me in February for the first time.
Oh, really?
And that was the gig was good. It was a tap house on my birthday show. So they're like, oh, my God, you got to come. And I was like, all right, I guess I can't say no for 7 years straight or whatever the hell it is. So come on out. And that was it was good. I made fun of them a lot, and it was fine. But it's still awkward. It's just like an extra thing to think about that, you know, I didn't really You got enough to think about while you're on stage. I don't want to like think about like, oh man, I better make my parents laugh.
Yeah, no. Now is with this show, are you thinking about doing crowd work and all? Like saying something like, I mean, I'm not the best looking guy, but at least I'm not Jim over there. Oh, Jim over there starting the lawnmower at 6 in the morning on Saturdays. Yeah, you ugly bitch. Yeah.
Where was it? Where was this comedy gold years ago? You should be doing the Indian Lake clubhouse shows.
Scott, I'm flying up, coming out of retirement. The Pearls is coming back on stage, baby. Oh, yeah. Just wait till I find out which one of them people's gym. I am just going to tear him a new one.
I just had some ad pop up on my computer that is going on right now about prenatal vitamins. Clinically proven
absorption. Oh. Is there something you want to announce on air?
Yes, guys. I am pregnant, guys. I am. I got a little one on the way. I got a little one on the way. So,
you're Schwarzeneggering it like that movie Junior.
Correct. Didn't you perform in front of your parents once?
I did. Yeah. I bombed. It was wonderful. Just nonstop and all. I'm like, I've always wanted to do this thing. God, was that crowd not helping me out that night.
So, like, on a scale of bomb level, like, 10 being the worst bomb you ever had, 1 being like, you know, it just wasn't a good set.
I would say about 6 or 7. I was giving them around the second half, but it was crickets the first, like, 4 or 5 minutes. It was at a comedy place you and I know well, where we did the original podcast, and you know sometimes you can hit with them crowds, but there's a lot of times you may not hit with that crowd, and it was pretty bad for the beginning of it.
Did you have to like come off stage and kind of like explain yourself, or did you just say, well, I sucked?
I don't remember. I sat next to him after that and just watched through the whole show, so it was just, I try to enjoy the rest of the show, and back in my head, I'm like, all night. Could have been a couple weeks ago or something like that.
That's what I'm worried about. Like my parents being like, oh, so this is what you go out at night and do and leave your wife at home and travel all over the East Coast to go do different things. And that's what you do your little skits about. Good job. Keep it up, honey.
Is that how you describe it to your parents, though? It's like, yeah, I go up there. I leave Alex at home. Don't worry. You can come on out. She won't be there. Don't worry.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's my birthday, so I specifically said, as my gift, stay home.
Hold on one second. So we had to fix Mike's voice a little bit. We had to fix Mike's voice was blowing out his microphone.
Scott says it's still broken.
We were just testing the volume, and I think you were at one point. I don't think it was actually going up or down with the knob, but I think you were going test. That's like when Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura is opening the door. But yeah, you sound better now. But yeah, bombing in front of the family was something I did not want to do. I did not do that yet. I did a set in front of my brother years ago that was not anything special. But yeah, I could sympathize with you as far as that being a miserable experience. And now was the reason they came because you wanted them to come, or was it because
I literally shut up the gig just because that was when I was still living in Jersey, and they came up for I forget if it was a regular visit or a holiday, but I set it up, and yeah, that didn't go. I mean, my dad even said like the other people who performed that night, they struggled a bit, so he can even sat back and said, well, you know, the only guy who literally worked out was the one who did like 90% crowd work. So,
yep.
But I mean, I've done good with other family members. I've performed from my cousin and my sister and stuff like that. It was just bad timing. That's the one you kind of want to hit your high note. You know, it's like, make my parents proud and all.
every time you were like silly as a kid and like you're so immature and like, no, I'm being funny, you know, really show them something. But nope, I should have been mature. 8-year-old.
Have you given any thought to coming out of retirement in Georgia?
I've had thoughts.
You've had thoughts.
My biggest thing is if I have time, and really right now that's the biggest struggle. Just I get out of work at like around 5:30-ish. There's really nothing. It's not like Jersey where it's like, all right, there's an open mic in this small town and that small town. It's literally you got to go into like Atlanta to hit a mic. I haven't really found anything outside the main cities, and that's the biggest problem. It's like it's not only, okay, now I'm going to use a day to try to get back on stage and stuff like that. It's literally I have to travel into the city where traffic is absolutely a nightmare to do at rush hour.
Yeah.
Try to get there, try to do it, and then add to it. It's like, I have no connection. So if any thought of, am I going to get back and perform, is probably minimum 3-4 months down the road and nonstop going to open mics.
I mean, even if you went to a mic a week and worked on a, you know, 6 or 7 minute spot or whatever they give you, and just iron that out. It, you know, that's all you need to get started. Get a guest spot on a show or something like that. I don't know. It'd be fun to hear you come back out of the, like, you know, like how like very often I Google, I'll type in Conor McGregor into my Google search to see if there's any rumors about him, a fight coming up. But usually nowadays it's just him getting arrested or punching an old man. So similar to you. That's basically all that keeps happening with you, and we, you know, you keep punching old men and stuff, and we never get the return of Berlew.
Yeah, I mean, I do like punching old men, so that's going to be hard to give up to go back on stage.
I mean, right away, the Confederate light show, man, right there. right there is 3 minutes.
I don't know. Maybe they'd be like, what's so funny about it?
Be like, yeah, we know it.
Love that.
Yeah, we love it. It's a Georgian staple.
What's so observational about this?
I got
just
engaged.
Talk about regular life.
I got engaged at the Confederate Lodge show.
It was gorgeous. I was hanging off of General Lee in the rocks, just screaming, Sarah, will you marry me?
I love you. Well, I guess we can segue a little bit to one of our guests here. I think we got two tonight. I'm not sure. We'll see how this works out. But, Berlew, we've had a lot of extreme or unique
alternative sports.
Exactly. Unique athletes here. Ranging from backwards joggers to female sumo wrestlers to
World Chase Tag,
the pogo guy,
the full contact no pads football league.
Yeah. Cliff diving. You know, we've had a bunch over the years, but a couple of Red Bull athletes. We've talked about this before, but I wanted to see if any new sports arrived over the years that we haven't talked about. And I found a couple that maybe I thought, you know, maybe you'd be interested in trying. Maybe coming out of retirement in comedy is not what you want to do. Maybe entering these sports to satiate your creative void, if you will. So maybe you want to get into this. So.
All right. What we got, Scotty?
Would you try volcano boarding? Volcano boarding. So racing down an active 2,380-foot volcano at speeds of 50 miles an hour with only a board for protection is considered by many thrill-seeking fanatics as the coolest, most extreme sport around. Thousands of travelers head to the foothills of Nicaragua, Cerro Negro Mountain, every year to take part in the new sporting craze. Surfers dressed in protective jumpsuits, knee pads, and helmets can reach speeds up to 80 kilometers an hour on their specially constructed plywood boards. Since its creation in 2005, the volcano boarding industry has attracted more than 10,000 participants. What do you think?
I'm just amazed there's a volcano industry out there.
What do you mean? Big tourism industry. Why not a big, you know, big boarding industry?
Yeah, no.
No? Nah. Not for you?
No. I don't have the coordination as is to deal with molten hot lava along with it. Probably not a good combo for the old Burroughs boy.
Did you just call yourself the Burroughs boy?
Well, I'm just saying the old Burroughs boy, you know. And just
it's growing. It's growing. It's your name is growing.
It probably will. I mean, you don't believe me when I said somebody gave me the nickname to Burroughs, even though I've shown you many examples.
Is this going to be like a P. Diddy thing, like a Puff Daddy, where like he has just multiple names over the years and just kind of like announces that he's going to have a new name and just no one reacts whatsoever?
Well, I mean, it's my life and I'll do what I want, and that sounds interesting, so we'll table it for another week.
No one's infringing on your right to change your nickname, Burlow. You don't have to protest and put a stance up, because you could be what, like, you're the Burroughs boy now, I guess. What's next?
I don't know. I mean, Big Bubba Burroughs.
Maybe what's next for you is limbo skating, Burlew. Limbo skating. This might be a little hard one for you to get into. So it appears next to impossible. Limbo skating, roller skating under cars, is the latest rage in India, requiring flexibility, strength, and a balance of a gymnast. Wonder Kid Annika Chindak holds the official world record of limbo skating beneath 57 cars.
Yeah, I got a feeling I get stuck under a Subaru around number 4. So that's probably not my expertise.
Well, I mean, yeah, let's think about it. You've been running a lot, maybe getting a little bit more pliable, a little bit more flexible. You know, maybe this is the next step, but, you know, save the wear and tear on your knees and put a strap on some skates.
I mean, we talking like SUVs or trucks, or are we talking like a regular sedan I got to try to sneak under?
Oh, we're talking like a sedan. The picture is the guy basically like spread completely wide. So low that he's fitting under like 6 inches of space.
Oh yeah. That's probably not going to work for me. No.
What about train surfing?
That sounds entertaining.
All right. Usually an illegal sport, train surfing involves riders climbing or surfing on the outside of a moving train or subway. So the practice is a serious issue in South Africa, where many young people have been killed or injured. The sport was made popular in the 1980s in Germany, where it was called S-Bahn surfing. The phenomenon was then forgotten, but in 2005 it was rediscovered by a gang from Frankfurt, Germany. The leader of the crew, and called himself the Train Rider, very, very original name, famously surfed the Inner City Expressway, the fastest train in Germany.
Yeah, that's a good nickname. I'm going to steal that. That's going to be after the Burroughs boy, the train.
So I'm going to be like, hey, guys, you're turning into Verbal Shenanigans. I'm Scott here, and that's Train Rider over there on the other mic.
Train Rider agrees, yeah. Yes.
Oh, so not only are you...
Warning!
Not only are you going to be Train Rider, you're going to speak in third person, too?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that fits Train Rider. I mean, I can't fathom Train Rider saying me. I've just figured Train Rider was just going around saying, I don't think Train Rider would do that.
That sounds like such an awful superhero. Train Rider!
I'd like to help you, but Thanos ain't on my route.
I know, exactly. You can only go, he's at the will of the trains.
I have to switch to the B train to get to him.
All right, how about... Go ahead.
So I'm just a little confused. Is it just they're hanging on the back of a train, or they have all over it, it looks like.
It looks like they're on the sides, they're on the top, they're kind of holding on to the windows, some of them.
So kind of like a parkour for mass transit.
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Kind of nailed
that. Down for that one. We're one in. All right.
All right. Out of the three, you're going with train riding so far.
Train rider all the way.
All right. How about crocodile bungee? So
continue.
Feeling jaded by garden variety bungee jumping, you might consider imitating how these Aussies spice up the sport. Bungee jumping into a body of water containing live crocodiles. So basically this came out of a part of a commercial campaign for Foster's beer. And a couple of people were, you know, diving in with crocodiles, because bungee jumping wasn't dangerous enough. Let's throw some reptiles in there.
Is it humanly possible to die a dumber way than crocodile bungee? in the grand scheme of somebody asking how did he die, is there any dumber response you can give than crocodile bungee?
Pretty sweet wake, though. Oh, you know, Mike, he was a good guy.
I mean, it's going to be closed casket, but I mean.
Mike was a good guy, you know. It's a real shame he went out in the. Doing what he loved, the crocodile bungee.
We kept telling him, stick to train riding, but no.
We're going to miss an old train rider. Here's to you, train rider.
Let me pour a little Foster's on the ground for you. Wait.
Let's all say goodbye to him with how he would have liked it. Crocodile claps. okay. Maybe that one's not for you. How about freestyle power riser stilt?
So many words, so much confusion. Tell me about it.
So you know those like power risers that people, I don't know, you might have seen them with people painting. They're kind of like boots that can kind of go up and down. It's kind of a cross between stilts, okay, and pogo sticks in a way. So it's an up-and-coming extreme sport where you wear things on your feet that are sort of like stilts or pogo sticks. The idea is to do stunts with them. It sounds a little boring until you see it, apparently, is the key. And you see a guy here kind of grinding on a fence with his power stilts.
I'm concerned when the first thing out of your mouth is, it sounds boring, but that's not the greatest way to get a sport going. Now, I wouldn't do that, but maybe I'd be down for like kung fu stilts. Or like UFC style stilt fighting.
Okay, all right. You think you could handle UFC stilt fighting?
I feel there'll be so limited amount of people who could attempt it that I might have a prayer winning this thing.
Okay.
That would be the thing that would bring Connor out of retirement.
All right, two more. How about underwater hockey? Little known sport, underwater hockey is what some divers like to do during the winter months when the outside water is too cold for diving. The sport was invented in Great Britain during the 1950s when some British divers were looking for ways to stay fit during the winter. The game is used nothing but more than snorkeling equipment and, of course, the stick, protective gear, and gloves, which adds breathing as an important game factor. Meaning players have to manage the oxygen in their body. The game is played at the bottom of the pool using a puck weighing over 1 kilogram. The sport is tough and tiring, though it is not as bad for experienced divers capable of holding their breath for extreme periods of time. The sport is becoming increasingly popular around the world, and some countries have formed national teams. Berlo, lead the USA to victory, Berlo. Come on.
I'd be down. But
How long do you think you can hold your breath right now? I was never good at holding my breath.
Yeah, probably 30 seconds, maybe,
I think you could do 30 seconds. Let's try it right now.
All right,
ready? I'm going to time you, okay?
Okay.
Be honest with the audience, and I'll try to commentate this as it's going. The hardest commentating job in the world, commentating. commentating. Breath holding.
Your breath. on a audio podcast.
Yes. All right, Burlo.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready. You can give me
3, 2, 1.
All right, he has inhaled. He is looking towards the left. That's his strategy. Now looking towards the right, keeping a stone face, headphones on, staring straight ahead in a couch position. Let's give you a little see into what is going on and where it's going on. On behind him is a blue wall with a Philly sting and a computer charger as he sits there. He seems to be getting intensely focused, looking deeply within his soul, deeply within his soul. Headphones still on, nothing moved. Eyes still look. He looks comfortable, Jim. Yep, he does look comfortable. So now this is the part where he's going to really have to focus, really rein it in, see how far he can go. The microphone is not a factor right now. The headphones are still and strong, and he still looks pretty confident. He's starting to move just a bit, just a bit. We know movement is a way for wasted breaths here, Jim. Yep, it is a movement for wasted breath. Back when Jimmy McKay set the record in 1940. Oh, Mike Burlo, a minute on the dot. 1 minute.
That was a minute. Wow.
That was a minute. Jeez.
All right. I'm twice as good as I thought it was.
Underwater hockey. Here we come. All right. Now I want to try.
All right.
You could time me. I could time myself. I could time myself. All right.
Time yourself.
All right. You can commentate here. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
All right. Scott has begun. He's looking up at his ceiling, kind of looking around, shaking his head, trying to keep his mind calm as he's going through, holding his breath. He seems pretty steady right now as he's blinking a little bit, looking around, kind of distract himself as the lack of oxygen's in his system. I mean, he's got some good form here. He's not panicking. He's not doing anything where I feel like he's ready to gasp. He's really moving along fine and all. I think he's got some good lung capacity considering all his time of lifeguarding and doing lake patrol and volleyball and running. Scott's got a pretty stern gain coming on, and he's kind of squinting his eyes like, yeah, I got this. Ooh.
57 seconds.
You'd have to be my second shift, Scotty. Sorry.
I knew I was screwed the minute I inhaled. I didn't feel like I got a deep inhale. Like I felt like, oh crap. I needed more. I needed more substance in. I felt like I shorted the breath. I went and then I only took in a little bit, so I knew I was a little bit screwed. That hurt. But even in a pool, I've noticed as years have gone by, not very good at holding my breath anymore. Maybe I'm just dying. I don't know. But all right, final one, Burley, before we get to our guest. Air kicking. In a strange extreme sport, a human catapult launches individuals over 26 feet in the air into a swimming pool or foam pit, so like a blob. Air kicking works. I'm still out of breath. Air kick works propelling participants through the air in a pre-calculated parabolic trajectory using a special combination of air pressure and water recoil technology. The participant sits in a specially constructed seat at the back end of the catapult. 3, 2, 1, liftoff. Approximately 60 liters of water are then forced through a rocket nozzle on the seat. The pressurized water propels the participant 8 meters through the air and a refreshing splash down into a swimming pool. So I don't know if the goal is to get as many kicks in as possible before you hit, or it's just getting the most height. I'm not really sure. It didn't explain very well.
This is a very confusing sport. I really, shockingly, when they brought out the catapult, they didn't really put a lot of thought into this game.
See, I would think like, okay, maybe like you get launched in the air and it's how many flutters you can do in one, in one lift, maybe that could be the sport to see how fast you can get moving in the air. That's better than just being launched into the air.
But who would want to watch that? I mean, a guy's shot out in a catapult, or the crowd just like 1, 2, 3. Oh, that was a partial kick. That don't count.
But, I mean,
no
listen,
side kickies.
Listen, people are still watching the Redskins weekly. You're asking how they would watching a stream kicking. It's pretty much the equivalent.
You're laughing at us now, but wait till we struggle for a 3-point victory over the Dolphins this weekend. I tell you that much.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Like I said, only the Redskins can give the Giants a second week of hope, because I don't think there's going to be many more weeks of hope for the Giants this season either. So, yeah.
The weird thing about this season, 2 wins might get you like a 9th draft pick. That's usually like top 3, and now there's so much garbage out there. Who knows what you're going to get?
All right, Berlu, let me try to get that out of my mouth again. We have something pretty unique. We've had some weird things on the show. We've had backwards runners. We've had hippo attack survivors. We had a woman who thought she was Marilyn Monroe reincarnated, but that never aired. But we did have her on the show.
We swear it happened. I mean, I know we keep bringing it up and we keep saying we would love to play for you and it will never happen, but it did happen.
Especially since I have no idea where that audio file might be. There's like, on the thing we recorded, there's probably a couple thousand files on there I'd have to comb through.
I just imagine like 50, 60 years from now, you pass away of natural causes, everything's good. And somebody has to go through your estate, and that's the first thing they find. And they're like, I guess Scott was just big into this woman. It's the first thing I found. And I kept talking about his podcast, Grandpa Scott. So
that's my contribution. This
must have been the whole thing.
That's my contribution to society is that interview. But we got something unique. We have a guy by the name of Jason Garfield coming on the show.
That is unique.
Yes, very unique name. And I got to get his credits correct. But basically, I was searching around the internet, and this video came up of something called combat juggling. Okay, not two words you generally put together. But I looked at this guy Jason Garfield, and he is the head of the WJF, the World Juggling Federation. And apparently there's something called combat juggling. Now, this guy's pretty jacked up, too. So I don't know if juggling gets you in shape or he just happens to be jacked and a juggler. I'm not sure.
Yo, man, I wouldn't mess with that dude's wife, man. Why? That dude's a juggler. You don't – I've known too many jugglers, man. They will mess you up.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the juggalo.
I was thinking that's next week's episode, everybody. The World Juggalo Federation will be joining us.
That'd be awesome. So let's get Jason Garfield in line. This should be interesting.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. We were just doing the intro to having you come on the podcast, and you know. We were saying that, you know, I hope you're never confused with a juggalo.
I'm a performing juggler as well. That's how I started. Well, I started competitively, then I segued into performing, then I segued into promoting competitions. Well, but I do a segment in my show that kind of extrapolates into if I ever need to get a job as an exotic juggler. That's the closest I come. So I think what you're talking about.
No, we were talking about fans of Insane Clown Posse, how they call themselves juggalos.
Oh, juggalos. I thought it was a play on gigolos.
No, but, no. They paint their face like clowns, and they follow them all around the country. Yeah.
I was pretty strict in the first few years about not allowing clowns into my events just because I didn't want to play into the stereotype. I wanted to separate the sport from the art from the circus because those are all different things.
I'll put it this way. You want to be called a gigolo before you get called a juggalo.
Absolutely. Oh, wait. Yeah, way more money in that, too. Absolutely.
So, Jason, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here. I basically came across – one day I was just scrolling around on Facebook, and I saw a video of – combat juggling.
That sounds interesting. Let's talk about that.
That actually is something, too. But combat juggling – yes. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Now, we've had a couple interesting people. We're just saying we've had like people who run the world's fastest lap backwards. We had the guys from World Chase Tag, which they created tag as a international sport. This one definitely popped out to fit right into our wheelhouse. What the hell is combat juggling, and how did that come about?
The original form of combat juggling is pretty much just a Royal Rumble, and it's held at juggling festivals all over the world. Many people are not aware that there are juggling festivals, but chances are there's probably one in your city or nearby at least once a year. And it's just a game that jugglers started playing late at night when there's nothing else to do. They just start attacking each other while they juggle. And there was no, I mean, there's two strategies. You either, you're on the assertive and you just try to take out everyone as quickly as possible and you're good and you can do it that way. Or you just hang out on the sidelines and wait until all the other people take each other out. And then what you're left with is the best person against the worst person. You know, the guy that's just kind of hiding out and, you know, winning by attrition, at least getting to second place. So I wanted to format that into more of like a team sport or one-on-one so that there's actually gameplay rules and you can't hide out. And so that started in about, I'd say 2010, I formed Major League Combat. And we came up with five different gameplay formats. One of them was similar to football, where you got a runner, basically the quarterback. He's got to make it to the end zone. And there's a bunch of jugglers trying to stop him by just trying to clobber his clubs to the ground. And another format is Sumo Combat, which is like a 12-foot diameter circle. You can either shove the other guy out while juggling the whole time, or you can just, you know, knock his clubs down to the ground. So that's the one that's got the most physical contact. Now we're kind of focused on just one-on-one. And we invented kind of a hybrid of dodgeball and juggling called dodge juggle, which is kind of what it sounds like, people trying to juggle while people are throwing balls at them, which people have done that before, but this is the first time we're actually awarding points for it. So we've got some of the best dodgeball players in the world throwing balls at like 90 miles per hour at these jugglers. Surprisingly, they're able to continue juggling while getting hit. Like, the goal is not to avoid getting hit. The goal is just to keep on juggling, whatever it takes. And so we've done that for a few years now. Our next event is coming up in November. We're going to be doing that again, combat juggling. And every year we try out some new gameplay formats. But that's kind of the Jugglers Under Attack segment of what we call the Moxie Games at SkillCon, which is the event.
I mean, this description alone sounds like the greatest event I ever recorded at a 4th of July picnic where some people got too drunk and they came up with this event. This is absolutely amazing, but...
And makes it even more fun to watch if you are a bit intoxicated. But even without that, it's amazing and it's funny at the same time. It's funny that it exists, and it's amazing that people are so good at something that is funny that it exists.
So how do you get this, like, started off the ground? Is it something where you literally said, okay, we can make this, like, a league? Or are you thinking just, like, hey, special event? Where were the first steps in this?
The first step started with my disappointment in the opportunities for sport juggling. So I created my own organization called the World Juggling Federation.
Yep.
I secured a deal with ESPN to produce the first ever sport juggling competitions on any channel, let alone, you know, the worldwide leader in sports. So in 2004, we produced the first series of five sport juggling competitions. And over the years, we just kept doing it. And then we started producing combat programs for ESPN, combat juggling programs. And then that kind of evolved into SkillCon and the Moxie Games. SkillCon is a convergence of viral skills and sports at one event. And the Moxie Games are the programs that we produce from the competitive sports at SkillCon. So, you know, there's other stuff in there. Like, we had pool trick shots. We had headis, which is basically like table tennis with your head and a larger ball. Those guys are from Germany, and they're incredible at playing table tennis with their head. I mean, it's just as amazing as what you're talking about watching combat juggling. And those guys are sometimes intoxicated while playing. So it comes full circle there. And that's when we introduced dodge juggle. So it all started off with my desire to get sport juggling on competition. Then it evolved to kind of help out other obscure sports and produce a program kind of like the Olympics, only for sports that can't get into the Olympics or at least haven't gotten into them yet. So it's kind of an Olympics for the freaks.
Mike, we got to hook these guys up with our friends at World Chase Tag. This is like a marriage made in heaven there. They're like exactly like you, like what you're saying. They kind of started with the wanting to make tag a sport, and they got kind of combined parkour and tag and it's really interesting what they came up with too. Now, how long have you been juggling? Were you one of those kids who picked it up, or did you pick it up later in life? Or
I was one of those kids. I started when I was 10 years old.
Yep.
And it was the only thing that I was really doing physically. I wasn't interested in any sports, wasn't really interested in any subjects in school. So that freed up all day to practice juggling because I didn't do anything else. And I got really good at it really fast. And I won some competitions earlier on with it. That kind of plateaued in my late teens when I realized, well, there's only so far you can really go with this. I don't need to be nearly as good as I am now to make a living at it. Most people are more entertained by people who juggle three apples and eat them, which is not hard. So, you know, I could do it with five, but why? People are amazed with three. But that's when I was still interested in improving and getting better and pushing the limits and creating incentive for other people to push the limits. So that's where the desire to create more incentive for jugglers to get better came about. And so that's when that whole mission started off in 2004. I got the idea in 2000, and then 2004 is when it actually started. And it's just been kind of an evolution of that desire. And now the goal is just to continue that and do the same thing for all these other events and the other sports that we've created that have a juggling base to them, but are more interesting for the general public. You know, sports where you can see jugglers actually getting hurt. That was the missing factor, I think, in increasing viewership. Oh, they can get hurt while doing it? Well, now I'll watch that.
Now, I mean, you said that was the only thing you were doing physically. Now, I see a picture of you, and you look like you're pretty damn in shape. Is that all from juggling, or are you doing other things too?
A lot of it is not from juggling at all. Actually, most of it. A little bit of the conditioning is. Juggling is cardiovascular,
right?
But it's an endurance right. activity, so it's if you're lighter and you have smaller muscles, you can juggle longer. But I don't like that look, so I supplement that, you know, with just basic, you know, resistance training.
And gotcha.
You know, I do bodybuilding as a hobby.
There you go.
I just think, you know, when you're a juggler, you need to give the audience as much as possible to watch in case they don't like the juggling. So having something else for them to look at that might distract them from what they're otherwise not interested in, such as, you know, a better looking physique than your stereotypical lanky juggler, is that's just one of the things that I add to it. And that's just a look I prefer. The baldness is intentional as well.
I thought you were going to say you needed something else to, like, you know, distract girls from telling them that you're just a juggler full time.
Yes, exactly. It's a twofer. It's definitely a twofer for in that regard.
No, but where has this the Juggling Federation taken you? Has it taken you all over the country, all over the world? Is it are we at the very grassroots of it, or has it actually spread to where you now are able to host large events?
Yeah, it's probably closer to the beginning than the end. Mm-hmm. Where it'll peak. But yeah, it's taken me, juggling alone has taken me all over the world. I've done events in the UK. We haven't done a ton of events outside of the country, you know, Canada and the UK basically. But for the most part, we've gone all over the country with it. The other organizations are interested in kind of being affiliates and running their own World Juggling Federation style competition. So we pass on our rule book to them so that they can run it. But, for right now, we're limited on manpower. So we just kind of focus where our priorities are right now. And so this kind of convergence of the World Juggling Federation SkillCon and the Moxie Games programs is what we're focusing on right now. And, it's an annual event. And then post-production of that sometimes takes up to 6 months. So there's really only so much we can do. So we're trying to expand mostly online and through our broadcasts.
Now, is this like other sports where there's going to be a bunch of different strategies, an offensive team versus a defensive team, or is it pretty much like a chess match where it's like, you know what to do, everybody's doing the same thing, let's see what happens?
No, I think there are definitely different strategies, depending on what sport you're talking about, but definitely it's evident in combat juggling and in dodge juggle. Dodge juggle is interesting because the team event, you've got, it's basically just dodgeball, but there's one juggler on each team that's juggling five clubs, and each team's goal is to just make that juggler drop, to knock his clubs, hit him in the face, knock the clubs, and, you know, whatever it takes to get him to drop his clubs. And so one team of five players has to defend that guy while attacking the other team's juggler. So you see a lot of different strategies developed in as much as how many people they leave on defense, because it's defense and offense both at the same time on both teams. So it's interesting to see. You can tell that some teams have put stack people on top of each other to get a higher, you know, a vertical advantage. so that has advantages and disadvantages. Like if a ball is coming at your face, you can't really get out of the way that quickly. So you get hit in the face. You're not out, but you know, you got hit in the face. And it's a good blocking technique, at least if you're protecting your juggler. But then in combat juggling, or even in the one-on-five, some of the jugglers kind of hide behind the other jugglers when the balls are coming at them. Or it's a combination of strategy. I mean, even in a chess match, there's strategy with that, and everyone has their own style.
Now, obviously, with the web and social media and Instagram, whatever you can do, you can find people who are into this, and you can form a community pretty quickly. Did you grow up with anybody else juggling, or were you kind of alone with this? And then how did you start to spread this, where you were able to find people all over the place to come together for these things?
What was interesting about it, it was as close to what you could call an overnight success when you're talking about juggling, in terms of, you know, international recognition.
Right.
Because I did go after practicing for about a year and a half, I did go to what was then the big U.S. Festival where they had competitions, and I won my first competition, and I was better than anybody else there. So that's all it really takes for everyone to get to know who you are. And then over the years, I just continued to improve, and I was known as one of the best jugglers in the world. Arguably, of course, nobody ever agrees on that. I do, but they don't. And so, you know, by doing that, and I was invited to other juggling festivals to teach workshops and perform. So by the time I started the World Juggling Federation, everybody knew who I was. So all I had to do is contact all of the best jugglers in the world and say, hey, I'm putting on this new idea. It'll be on ESPN. You want to join in? And everybody wanted to. So it was pretty easy for me because I had a reputation. I wasn't like just some guy that no one had ever heard of that's just got this idea. Although jugglers would, you know, join that guy too, because they don't have much going on.
Right.
So it was really an easy thing to set up in terms of participation.
Pretty cool. I found it in my spam filter, but hey, at least I got something to do on the weekend, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And who doesn't like going to Vegas? At least I'm going to Vegas.
Now, have you guys seen so far anybody who might have been like outside of the juggling community, who's an athlete, who's been able to come in, or has it just been purely jugglers who've been able to match up with each other?
There's actually an Olympic gymnast, just to name one, who got into juggling pretty seriously. His name is Lance Ringnald. And I believe he was maybe in the late 80s or early 90s. He was in the Olympics, and but he got really into juggling after that. And I mean, he got up to juggling 7 balls, I think 5 clubs. So that's way above just like, you know, someone who's doing it as a hobby. And then once we started merging dodgeball with juggling, you know, some of the best dodgeball players are getting involved with it as well. I mean, that's still kind of an obscure sport, but it's more well known than the sport of juggling, I think, mainly because of the movie. But but also everybody plays dodgeball in school at one point or another.
Now, what about you personally? Like, how are you still playing the actual sports that you basically have helped create, or are you managing at this point?
I take credit for making it too difficult for me to keep up with the skill level of juggling.
Wow.
So I'm not even going to try anymore. I still keep up to do my show and do moves that are more difficult than most performing jugglers are doing. In terms of, you know, there's the whole internet and video effect of the progress of any sport. You know, once people see what's possible with juggling, something that used to be insurmountable seems to be easily achievable, and then they surpass it. And so that's what's been going on since 2004, which just happened to be around the same time that the internet took off,
right.
YouTube and the World Juggling Federation competition. So you got the best of all of that. You got to see those competitions online. And I mean, a lot of people say that they were motivated by our competitions. That's and they're cool. The ones that are the kids now are better than the adults were when we started.
That's like, so, you see these videos of like these 8-year-old, 6-year-old kids playing drums, like doing covers of like Rush and Led Zeppelin. It's like, how is that possible? It's all because of that. It's just they're able to see everything right in front of them and kind of learn it right there. Are you able to make any money off juggling, or is it still completely just a hobby or an interest?
The events pay for themselves for the most part. I make money by performing. So, you know, going on cruise ships or corporate events, I get paid to go out and do that and do like a 1 hour show.
Awesome.
Interesting. Yeah. What is the overall goal of the league itself? Are you looking for TV deals, like sponsorship of the teams? What's the overall focus right now?
I think the overall goal, what we're working on right now, is regular programming on a platform that'll get us the most viewership. So, yeah, of course, it increases the value for our sponsors. Zappos is our sponsor for the past 2 years and at least for the next 2 years. Next year, we're going to be holding our event at Zappos campus in downtown Las Vegas. We're going to put a big Dodge juggle court right in the middle of their plaza. That's and cool. hold our event there for all their employees. And so the goal is to kind of put together kind of a season of different events that all culminate into our Olympic programming of the finals of all these different events. So, you know, about 10 hours every year of programming. We're going to take this internationally and go out and shoot competitions like where Hedis was founded out in Germany. Go out there and record their main events and integrate that within the programming. So, kind of like a nature show of obscure sports.
That's cool. So how about you? How many different objects, when you do your show live, what kind of things are you juggling? I'm assuming it's not just the batons and whatnot. And also, what is the highest amount?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what is the highest amount of things you can actually juggle?
Sure. Well, there's a difference between how much I can juggle and how much how much I have juggled and how much I can juggle at any given time.
Right.
Working backwards, my record, I had the world record for 11 balls back in 2001.
11.
Wow. And just to give you an idea of how that's been surpassed because of, I wouldn't say the video of me doing it, but it wouldn't have hurt. Now the record, I believe, is 14 balls. Oof. So, so they've got – I don't even know how you would hold
that.
Like, I thought I'd try 13 balls at one point. I didn't know where to put the 13th ball. I can hold 12. The 13th one is a mystery where that's that comes
crazy.
From. It'd have to be attached to you or something. but then – sorry, your first question.
I was saying what kind of things in your show do you juggle?
What kind of things, yeah. I do basically balls, clubs, rings, and ping pong balls for comedy. So I don't do like the knives and the chainsaws. I actually debunk that in the show. I explain how it's just as easy as juggling three of anything. So just because the end that you don't catch anyway looks scary doesn't make it more difficult to juggle it. If you're a bad juggler, it's dangerous. But if you're somewhat competent, and it's more dangerous for the audience, really, if you're a bad juggler. I demonstrate like the sport competition skills. And I integrate that with audience participation and comedy, juggling ping pong balls with my mouth, all that kind of stuff. I think I'm the only juggler, though, that has a volunteer shove the balls into my mouth instead of doing it myself. So that
you mean the ping pong balls, right?
Difficulty. Yeah, just the – yeah, just the ping, they're the only ones that fit on a good day.
Well, you're important, man. You have no time to do it yourself, so you need an assistant.
Right.
That's how it works.
Yep.
That's awesome.
What are kind of new events are you thinking about? Could you see something like heavy juggling? Who can juggle the heaviest objects? Or what more can you add to this?
Actually, Guinness asked me that question about a year ago. They sent out a crew to SkillCon to record a bunch of different world records at one event. And so they wanted me to come up with one that I could do, being the organizer. And so I thought, well, maybe combine two things that I already kind of can do to make something that's difficult. And so I came up with the idea of juggling five balls while squatting 135 pounds. And I just made it up. I had never tried it before. I didn't even think about how it would be possible. I assumed that there'd be a barbell I'd have to balance on my back while I juggled. And so about a month, maybe a couple of weeks before the event, I thought, well, maybe I should start practicing this. Because squatting 135 pounds is not that difficult.
Right.
Juggling five balls is not that difficult. But what it didn't anticipate is how much bar wobble would happen once you start trying to juggle with a bar on your back. Because you hold your hands close together, you reduce the amount of space that the bar can balance on by bringing your shoulders inward. And so that took a little bit of practice. And then my impatient nature caused me to blow out my knee because instead of standing back out after I dropped a ball, I just tried to pick it up, which helped, caused me to hyperextend my knee. And then that was messed up. So at least I got out of doing it. I didn't have to figure out a way.
That's a hard
thought, what if I put a
hard injury to explain to the average person. Hey, what'd you do to your knee?
Well, maybe he got the world record for the world's weirdest injury.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he get that?
Oh, I should submit that. You're right. Yeah.
But like every time, what'd you do to your knee?
I had only made it to 4 balls, too. I hadn't even made it to 5 balls yet.
Jeez.
So maybe I'll try that again. I was thinking it'd be easier if I just put like a 135-pound person on my shoulders, because at least that would balance a little bit easier. But they wanted something more iconic, and so they wanted the barbell. So instead, they got nothing. But maybe next year I'll try it again.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, it's really cool to see. You know, we love talking to people who are always like trying new things and pushing the limits of something we think like we sometimes forget about, and then all of a sudden we see. You know, hordes of passionate people doing it, and cool to see different things like finding new ways to get attention. So, you know, we wish you the best of luck with whatever you got going on. I mean, it seems like you have a lot of irons in the fire, if you will, on where to take juggling next. If people want to check you out or check the Federation out or really get a gist of what you do, where is the best place for them to go?
The best website for the event is skillcon.org, skillcon.org. That's got all the information on our next event this November and videos that you can look up of the Moxie Games broadcast that have already been on the air. We just had our most recent two broadcasts on ESPN in August, and in about 4 months we'll be able to put those online. But yeah, that and, of course, my name, jasongarfield.com, is my website. I do a show on called Fast Food that chronicles my escapades fasting for up to 100 hours at a time and then eating way too much and then following that up by nice. Fasting again to burn. So I burn it off, I put it back on, I burn it off again pretty quickly. So it's kind of a talk show meets eating disorder kind of program.
Nice, nice, very nice. Like I said, Jason, we wish you the best of luck and I hope you can get this off the ground even more and maybe you'll be in New Jersey sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
I thought when he said it's a you know, disorder juggling show, maybe he's juggling different like disorders. Like this week, I got
anxiety and OCD this week. Oh, can I keep it up?
I'm juggling torches and bulimia. But that was cool, man. He fits right into like a category that we've done a few times, like as far as these interesting sports and these new. It reminded me of we had the pogo guy, right? Didn't we?
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. So yeah, go check him out. Go check out the World Juggling Federation, and it's just fun to watch. You got to go check out their YouTube videos and whatnot. It's pretty cool. So Jason Garfield. All right, Berlew, it is also guest time yet again, and today we are joined by, I feel like this is, for us on the cast, is the year of the musician. Like, I feel like when we do our end of the year recap, we are going to be heavy into music territory this year.
I feel thousands of years from now, when we're looked at as podcast gods in our calendar, this will be the year of the musician that... everybody will teach their children about, you know.
So
that was the year that, you know, it happens like every 8 years. I think it's equivalent to Year of the Monkey.
So there's going to be an entire Verbal Shenanigans calendar?
Of course. I mean, everybody hates Mondays, so I'm getting rid of that crap. Right there. The podcast god has spoken. You're welcome.
So our good friends at Ray B Entertainment, who have got us – I don't know. It's got to be dozens of guests at this point. Hooked us up with on the show. We talked to so many really cool people over the years through them. But they hooked me up with a guy by the name of Chris Lee, and he is the head of the Chris Lee Band. Go figure. But they're a pretty cool band. They have a new album coming out in October 11th. So by the time this comes out, this might be out already. But we got Chris Lee coming on the show. So,
do you think he's from the Bruce Lee family?
I mean,
because I was hoping that, because all I did was watch Bruce Lee movies all day. I have no other questions for him.
I mean, Lee really is such a rare name that it's probably.
Yeah, it has to be true.
But let's give Chris Lee a call. Chris, I before like we even start or even talk about music whatsoever, where the hell does Hammy Fat Ass come from? You know, sometimes we set these interviews up, and you know, they have, people have these these agents we got to call into, or PR people, or we got to get their like names and numbers. No, we get yours, and we just get Hammy. Call Hammy Fat Ass. You could be anybody right now.
Short version, the most name I ever come up with in my life is
Hold on, Chris, we're losing you there.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, just say like a sentence or two. I can always cut this out.
Yeah. Okay.
You sound good now.
A friend of mine and I, we were obsessed with 80s teensploitation movies.
Nice.
And you know, so there's always the bad guy who's like the rich dick's son, who's like, I'm taking over the pool and we're gonna turn it into whatever. And so we wrote the script and we thought that guy's name should be Hamilton Malone, but everybody called him Hammy Fat Ass.
You.
That's it. I'm not going to ask you any questions about your music. I just want to hear this movie and then pay you for it.
It was called, what was it called? Belly Flop. It was about a pool where the kids are getting their you already know the plot. The pool's going away. It's going to become condos. But the fat guy saves him through a diving contest where he belly flops.
This is fantastic.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's I gotta give credit. My friend Mike O'Connell, who's like a comedian, and I came up with that. So
listen, I know you're putting out you got a new album, you got new music and whatnot, but I think the next album has concept album written all over it. Songs behind Hammy Fat Ass.
Oh, you're killing me, man. I would love to do something like that. That is so up my alley. Are you kidding?
I mean, maybe belly flop on Broadway. Maybe that's the best way to combine the two things.
It's like we're bringing Ethel Merman style Broadway productions back.
Well, Chris, let's get into your actual music and not your real passion project. But, we'll get to your music. So are you were you a guy – like, how'd you grow up in music? Were you a guy who picked up a guitar and was classically trained? Did you pick up – were you in some punk garage bands growing up? How did you really get into music?
You know, I'm the other end of that where, like, I had some musical – background as a kid, piano and saxophone. Nice. But when I got to college, I had some friends who were like, we're starting a band, we need a bass player. And they just handed me a bass. And I was like, I've never played bass. And they're like, any idiot can play bass. So that's kind of what got me into it. And then I got hooked on it, got hooked on showbiz. But basically that's it. And then later, when I started my own band, I started singing and playing guitar.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but bass is like the gateway drug of bands.
It is. It is. That's how I entered the music world back then. My friend had a bass he was selling for $100. I'm like, well, that's about what I have, so I'm a bass player now.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we've had Victor Wooten on the show. I'm guessing that's the same story. It's just
here you go. Get to work.
Stu Cook from Creedence. I'm sure that's how it happens, But when did you – so were you in a ton of other bands prior to the Chris Lee Band? Were you – or was this like your first project and you've stuck with it?
No, I was in, a band called Supergroup for like 14 years. And, a professional band. We toured all over the world. We were signed. We had singles on the radio. Our era was 98 to like 2012. Mm-hmm. And we're like we're in that underground rock scene. We tour with bands like Fu Manchu, Nashville Pussy, Super Suckers, nice. Reverend Horton Heat.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we were also very AC/DC. Like we were more hard rock than punk rock, if that makes sense. So we'd also tour with like Alice Cooper, Whitesnake, Deep Purple, Ted Nugent. So we kind of had this weird. We were young guys trying to be a classic rock band. So essentially, we didn't have the classic rock hit, but we had the other stuff. and then my brother was in the band with me. He was like the Angus, and I was like the Bon Scott. But he started having kids, and we didn't realize we were so dumb that we were like, oh, the kid will pop out, we'll be back on the road. I mean, we worked a lot, like 250 days a year, but we thought the kid would pop out, we'd be back on the road, but that's how the band kept going. Was you have to tour a lot, you know, just to keep the machine going. And once he started having kids, that became quickly untenable. So I left music for 6 years. That was in 2012. And just recently I decided, you know what? I kind of miss this. I miss performing, and I was motivated to write songs. And so that's why I put this record out.
Nice.
Yeah, I just see the scene like at Thanksgiving where they're just staring at each other from across the table. And he's like, man, remember that time we rocked in Nashville? Man, that was something. But enough about that. How's the little girl doing, bro?
Yeah, it's not quite like that. You know, my brother is also got his own metal band called Cretus. He calls it like, you know, his art project. So he does like Megadeth style metal now But yeah, it was good for us to. We didn't realize it at the time, but it was probably good for us to get hanging up then, to be honest.
Now, when you don't have like a background in music, are you kind of jamming like, oh, this kind of sounds like this band or that band, or were you just naturally like, I'm going to make something up and it's going to work?
I started out with. When you first start writing songs, you think everything you do is amazing. and then you quickly realize, oh, no, that's not amazing. That's terrible. So you write more songs. But of course, your songwriting is very influenced by what you listen to. Right. So I was listening to a lot of AC/DC and Motorhead and Van Halen. And so that's kind of where Supergroup went, was in that world. And then lately, I've been listening to a lot more like Neil Young and David Bowie and Creedence. Creedence is a fucking amazing band, and so I think the songs kind of reflect like this record is. It's while it's still hard rock, it's definitely more like the David Bowie end of classic rock than the AC/DC end.
Nice.
But you know what? Back to your question, I don't know. I just write the songs, and then if I like them, they make the record, and if I don't, they don't.
Yeah, you would like it. A couple months ago, we were able to have Stu Cook on the podcast from Creedence. It was pretty cool.
Very cool.
Really cool guy to talk to. But let me ask you. So when you were making these albums, now obviously things have changed from the traditional route of needing a record deal and needing you know, big company backing and whatnot. People are able to either record on their own or do it for cheap, or they're able to really get their music out there in so many different ways, whether it's streaming or even just sending to people and do it. What was your process in this album? Did you get in the studio and record? Did you demo things? Like what was your the way you made this album?
Well, because I've done a lot of this before, I have lots of friends who are talented musicians and engineers and have studios and stuff. So it kind of started with me and a drummer, John Gray, just wanting to jam, and I wanted to fuck around with these songs. Mm-hmm. And so we started playing live, like this is like 2 years ago, just me and him, just full on doing the Local H style.
Yeah.
Two man band, you know,
Black
two man
Keys
bands.
Style,
and
white,
yeah, exactly. And then I added a bass player, and then I added a guitar player. And pretty soon the guys were like, hey, we should put this on tape. And so then I would call other friends, and my friend Travis Stewart, who's in the band now, he had a studio, so he helped me put together the record. He let me use his, he was nice enough to let me use his studio and do most of my tracking there. And then another friend of his did my mixing and drum sound. So it was just sort of organic, you know, and it was mostly like friends and favors, really. I mean, nice. I did spend some money, but it was like, hey, when your room isn't occupied, can I go in there, kind of thing. So,
nice.
Yeah. And as far as like the label thing, you know, I pursued it. I called our old lawyers and the Supergroup's lawyer and publicist and people that radio people we'd worked with before. And they're all like, yeah, the world doesn't need another 40 something year old singer songwriter. So you should just put it out yourself.
Jeez. Wow. Knocking out a whole age.
yeah. I actually prefer it to be laid out for me like that. So I was like, okay, no problem.
All right. Later. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when you formed your own band, and what were you looking for in the group members going into it?
Well, that's a good question. That's, I feel like there has to be, of course, a base level of musical ability, right? You have to be able to play, but probably once there's a lot of people can play though. So once you have that, it's who's the coolest to hang out with? Who's not an asshole? who's not gonna show up and say like, yeah, I bought drumsticks. Here's the receipt. You owe me. You know, like, you know, that'll get you kicked out of my band. That kind of shit. Yeah. So and then so a lot of it is just like, can we hang out? Can we have some drinks together? Are we going to have a good time? I for me, that is pretty important.
That's cool. So what are you doing now? Are you to support the album? Are you going on tour? Are you keeping it local? What's the future support for the, and again, the album is protest songs and party anthems. So what are you doing with the album?
Well, it comes out October 11th. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play a hometown gig in New Orleans, like a record party. And then we're playing New York in November and Los Angeles in December, sort of as like, you know, I'm going to invite friends from other bands. I'm not like most tours these days. I mean, like we have an agent and we have, you know, the ability to tour, but most tours are put together where the little band has to pay to be on the tour. Yes. And I'm not going to do that. So hopefully someone who I've played with before or knows me and my reputation will take pity on us and give us some dates here and there.
Nice.
Yeah, that's sort of the plan.
Your album, I mean, it talks about it's a current dealing with the current political climate. It's always kind of interesting, like as me and Scott talk about, like comedy, where it's to the point where you don't want to even touch anything political just because you're either going to hit a group or it's just going to be like a million miles away and they're going to hate you. There's no coming back. What made you look into like doing something like this?
Also, don't you think the political climate is perfect at the moment? So harmonious.
You know, I got to say, I'm in the same boat as you comedians. I have never wanted to be upfront with opinions, you know, like the most controversial statement I'll ever say from the stage would be like, are you having a good time? You know, like,
whoa,
like
you don't want to divide
your audience. You don't want to like have half your audience turn off to you or all of them. But you know, I'm not doing this for a living. I don't have to worry about backlash from fans. I'm doing this for me.
Right.
So, you know, in a way, it is kind of my art project too, because I get to just say whatever the fuck I want and not worry about it. So we'll see when I start playing live. I hope I don't get shot by some nut, but
I mean, that goes without saying, I think. But.
Yeah.
Although,
any situation, if you're doing a kid's album, you'd probably be like, this is great, but I don't want to get shot.
Then again, if you survive, album sales might go through the roof. So just think about it. Just think about it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, that'd be Jesse Smollett situation.
Did you hear someone shot Fatty Hammy Fat Ass?
Hammy Fat Ass is down.
That's a sequel to it's Belly Flop 2. And, it's the big belly flop, but he got shot in the ass. So we're not sure if he's going to save the community pool this year.
So real quick, before we go here, the album's coming out, like you said, the 11th. If people never heard the band before, I know like people don't like to be pigeonholed into genres or whatever, but what can you expect from someone checking out the album, maybe on Spotify or whatnot, expect from the album?
Well, I think the title kind of sums it up. You know, I didn't want to be like a bunch of protest songs and it sounds like you're a school marm scolding the class. So I put those lyrics to some pretty fun and rockin' and fun plus rockin' songs. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you just like a good time rock and roll record, like people used to love, that's what I was going for. So I know that rock and roll is not very popular these days, but I'm of the age where I still love it, and so I think that'll come through on the songs too. It's the kind of record you could put on at a party and just leave it on, and no one's gonna get mad about it. Everyone's gonna just be kind of bopping along.
That's awesome, man. And for people listening to the podcast here, where's the best place to go check you out, or really kind of get an idea of your sound?
It's on Spotify, of course, YouTube, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's The Chris Lee Band. All those things / The Chris Lee Band and thechrisleeband.com. So yeah, it's pretty. It should be pretty much everywhere. Where you listen to music.
That's awesome. Chris, we wish you go ahead, Mike.
I got to get one more in here. As a person who's serious about music, what kind of inspiration went into running a song for a Disney musical puppet show?
True.
That was, you know what? That was like a very long development process. It was probably close to 18 months. So I wrote maybe 36 songs for that before we landed on one. So the inspiration was simply like, I was like working in a coal mine. I was just like, all right, how about this? How about this? How about this? How about this? So it was way less inspired and more like very workmanlike, blue collar style songwriting. So I kind of considered it like I was writing a commercial or something.
We're like the Disney people, like, no, we don't think our puppets would be into that song. Try again.
Well, it was more like we were supposed to come up with a thing for them that they liked. Like, they didn't have any preconceived notions, so we kept throwing shit at the wall, and it wasn't like they'd say no. They'd just be like, yeah, that's great, what else? So yeah, you can see that's on YouTube, the final thing. It didn't get picked up obviously, but it was called Frenchie and Jet. It's on YouTube. So the idea we landed on was, there was these puppets, there was kids that go to a school, and this magic piano starts following this brother and sister around. And the piano, it turns out, when they want to write songs. So when they write a song on the piano, what they don't realize is anything they sing about, the piano makes happen in real life. And so for us writing it, we were like, okay, so the piano's like drugs and the music is like your experience on drugs. So we were trying to slip some subversive shit into Disney's into Disney's food chain, and they probably wisely figured that out.
It could be the plot of a horror movie where the piano is just this mass murdering Casio that just.
Don't think of anything bad. You know, it's very Ghostbusters-y.
I love it.
No, don't play chopsticks. I'll murder people.
Well, Chris, we had a lot of fun here, man. We wish you the best with the album. We wish you the best with your exploitation movies. We wish you the best with whatever you got going on and whatever tour you're doing or wherever you can go. Good luck with everything.
Cool. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate you having me.
No problem.
All right. I look forward to hearing them.
All right, Berlew. Another podcast in the books here. Closing our way down to 260. No, closing our way onto 300. I guess we're already at 262 or whatever the hell this is. So we're on our way.
So when are we going to get like the major network that's going to do like the behind the scenes in the lead up to episode 300? Like, do I plan to have the executives from like VH1 or maybe a logo or some network like that who's ready for like the whole behind the scenes lead up, you know, the pressures that we go through to come up with these shows week in and week out.
I was hoping like, you know, maybe, you know, like how they give platinum or gold records away for like a million sold. I was hoping maybe we'd get like 100 episode plaque, a 200 episode plaque, a 300 episode plaque, but so far nothing. Maybe it just got lost in the mail. But I don't know, you know, so
maybe we were going to get one and they shot down iTunes.
Yeah, maybe our numbers were too high. They didn't want to just start, start making other podcasts feel bad. So,
maybe our rewards with Podcoin.
Podcoin, you were good while you lasted.
Yep, another one bit the dust.
Is Podcast Land still up? That's an interesting question.
It was, and I was trying to do votes, and I think they blocked some of my email addresses from voting.
What bastards. Oh, yeah, it is still up there. Yeah, so that's what we should promote.
Exactly.
Go vote for us on Podcast
Land. Podcast of the month. For once.
But, Berlew, anything to promote before we get the hell out of here?
I'll just do my usual Michael Berlew random stuff, facebook.com/theberlew721. We're a third of the way into Pumpkin Spice Whatever. You know, we've been having some fun with this. We've been getting a lot of feedback. It's very enjoyable. Me and the wife, Izzy, do Pumpkin Spice flavored food reviews all month long and try to do a little banter back and forth, and sometimes a dog comes in and interrupts everything, but it's all cute and fun and people seem to like it, and I hope you like it, so check it out. It's on facebook.com/DABURLS721.
And you could check out my new show where me and my wife review Apple products called Apple Seasoning Maybe. That'll be
honey, we got competition. We need a spinoff show. Get some peppermint crap in here.
No, I'm going to promote just us, man, and promote Denville Radio because we're glad to be on there. So another place to go check us out. We're on a couple different things, comingrightup.org, a couple different internet radio stations, most importantly on iTunes. DTN
Community Network.
Yeah. We're on a bunch of things. So, most easiest way to listen to us is on any podcast player. And I guess that's really it, guys. It's been fun. Time to get the hell out of here. And life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Goodbye, train rider.
I've got you.
I've seen you guys.
Under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of...